To the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are on the third oral argument. We have six cases on our calendar today. Three of those are oral. And so I will ask the marshal to call the third case just to keep our record clear. Thank you.
Calling A230681, Jesus Cardenas, respondent versus Javier Cardenas et al. Appellants.
All right. And with that, I just want to note that counsel is here and present. We're proceeding via Zoom as indicated in the court's notice. We do maintain an audio recording of today's proceedings. And for that reason, I just want to remind you of something you probably know, which is when you start your remarks, please identify yourself as well as the client you represent so that our record is clear. And then secondly, while you're on the screen proceeding through our conversation, please make sure that you have visible the court's clock. It should show 15 minutes right now, and it will count down, letting you know how much time remains. And we so appreciate hearing from you today and having a conversation. It's sometimes easy to get caught up in the conversation and forget the clock. So if you just have that in front of you, then we'll all be on the same page. And with that, we are ready to hear from counsel for appellant. So you can go ahead when you're ready, Mr. Wettering.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Bill Wettering, and I'm here representing the appellants in this case, Javier Cardenas and Irma Zamora. This is on appeal, as the court knows, from a verdict in a jury trial situation and post-judgment motion for new trial and so forth. I believe that the appellants here are entitled to a new trial because the evidence that was submitted to the court was not properly evaluated by the jury or evaluated at all by the timing involved in this case, and that denied my clients a fair trial in this matter. And I think if I might just lay out what the case was about just briefly. These were Jesus Cardenas and Javier.
If I could, I just want to remind you that we all have had a chance to read the factual discussions in the briefs, as well as get a chance to review the special verdict interrogatories that the jury answered. Okay. I wanted to ask you quickly, just to make sure I don't forget, because the special verdict interrogatories were fairly detailed. And they included a question about, I was going to try to refer to it so I could be really specific. Let's see, I think it's 3D, having to do with what amount, if any, did Beatriz Cardenas withdraw from non-partnership purposes, and there was an amount determined. I didn't see where either your motion for a new trial or your brief to this court challenged that determination, but I might have missed it. So I just want to make sure I ask you that, because it was clear to me that you're challenging most of the other findings.
Right. That count was admitted by the defendants in the case at that time. So that is not part of this at all. We admit that we owe the partnership back that amount of money. It was a check written by the daughter of one of my clients to herself, apparently, or more than one. In any event,
Mr. Wettering,
the thrust
on the it seems like at heart, correct me if I'm misinterpreting the argument, but if I were to summarize it, is it accurate to say that it's your position, your client's position, that there was a substantial amount of documentary, financial, and other evidence that was presented to the jury, and by the fact that they quickly rendered a decision, they couldn't possibly have given that evidence the consideration necessary to render a fair judgment? Is that an accurate way to summarize your argument?
That would be the first part of it, yes.
So I know in these financial disputes and commercial disputes, it's not just that the jury's given a stack of documents. It's usually these documents are introduced with testimony and there's discussion, and jurors are taking notes about and keeping track of numbers. I mean, we don't know in the record, of course, whether there was note taking going on by the jurors, but is that an implausible theory that the jurors were paying attention to the evidence when it was presented, and so the numbers were for each one of these properties was sufficiently in view, and the understanding as to who owned which properties was sufficiently presented that they didn't feel the need to go pour through the documents. Is that plausible or not plausible?
I don't believe that's plausible. I think they had notes during the closing arguments and things like that, but I don't think it's plausible that there was enough discussion in the trial itself, other than just making reference to it and making reference to it in the closings, as well as saying, you know, look at this document, these documents will show transactions and so forth that affect the answers to these questions.
So it was only during closing, it wasn't during testimony that the numbers were presented to the jurors?
Yeah, no, they were presented. Transaction steps were presented.
So why isn't that enough? I'm not aware of any cases that say that we don't that we toss out a jury verdict if the jury came back quickly, even in a complex dispute.
I understand. I believe I would say to this that this was a very document heavy case, and it was a situation where my clients were showing by these documents the properties that they had purchased with independent sums, not sums that were partnership assets. And that those documents clearly show how those were purchased and that they were not partnership assets. And then the catch 22, or the irony for us here, is that all of the proceeds that the plaintiff removed from partnership assets in this case were not documented in any way, because he was in control of cash deposits that he never put in the bank. And that, so we're at a detriment there, but they did not reconcile with the receipts for rents, which then my clients used to do their accounting and calculations and pay their taxes. So you had one client here, or one party, who had everything they did was documented through their bank accounts, through their tax returns, and so forth. And you had the other party, who was unbeknownst to my clients, taking money in the form of cash rents, not depositing them, no record of them, and then turning around and saying, well, your removal from the accounts, my client's removal from the accounts to pay taxes, to reimburse third-party lenders for purchases of property and things of that nature, those are improper removal from the account, and those are all documented when actually they were proper removals from the account.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's a very helpful to understand your perspective on the record. And I guess I want to ask you it this way, my question this way. The argument you're making is a very persuasive argument about credibility of the two parties in the case. And I assume it's one that was made to the jury. And the jury was in the seat position to evaluate that. Because, of course, you know that although documentary evidence, especially about financial and property matters, is very persuasive, especially to courts and to juries, it isn't the only evidence that can be offered. So, for instance, this is a partnership that existed on verbal agreement alone, right? I mean, there's no document that reflects the exact terms of this partnership. So a lot of the testimony in this case was based on more than the documents. There also is, like I said, your argument about which side is more credible because they had more documents, it's one that can be made to the jury and is persuasive. But this court doesn't second guess that. I mean, presumably the jury's verdict suggests that they believed Jesus's testimony, and I'm just going to use first names because they both have the same last name. Jesus's testimony with regard to what he did, both with the partnership assets, the physical assets, as well as how he managed and maintained this partnership that involved managing quite a number of properties in Worthington, Minnesota. So, you know, that is a whole piece of the testimony you haven't alluded to. You've just talked about the documents. The jury was there to evaluate and weigh all of that. So help me understand how, on our standard of review, we would grant a new trial in light of that.
Because in order for the jury to properly evaluate the thing other than without reference to the actual transactions that occurred, is likability and credibility. Sure, they're allowed to determine some credibility, but I want to go into this just a little bit, because we didn't disagree with everything. We had, I think there was 19 properties, Judge, and we had stipulated that 11 of those properties were partnership properties, and that the remaining properties were not partnership properties. We're also arguing about the withdrawals that my clients made from those accounts to pay taxes and to pay third-party lenders. And I would just direct the court's attention specifically to in the transcript to page 373 and 374 and 375. A dispute arose between them when the wife of one of my clients, the wife of Javier Cardenas, came into the process wherein now she was the person getting the loans from the bank in order to buy the properties. And Jesus Cardenas, the plaintiff in the case, objected to that and said he didn't want to be any part of that anymore. He said, if you want to go and buy houses yourselves, I'll just quote it at line 15 on 374. I told him, that's it. If you guys have money, get more houses, you know, that's what I told him. They never told me where they got the money. And you know, I was helping, you know, with the paperwork here. That's what I know. And they went out then after that and secured these additional properties with independent down payments where the rents paid the monthly installment payments on the remainder of the debt and everything like that. So those were independent. And he said that in trial. And then when we get to the end of the trial, it's like, well, I own half of all of the houses, not just the 11 that we agreed on. And that is where the rub comes in. Besides the fact that, Judge, common sense will tell you, if you are going to collect rents, pay the bills out of the account, or pay them with cash where you have receipts, you're going to take that and give it to your accountant, and your accountant is going to do your bookwork, having your gross revenues, having your expenses deducted therefrom. And not one time did the plaintiff in this case ever submit any information that he had retained rents to live on himself. They knew that he lived in one of the houses, but he was also retaining money. And then he just tells the court, well, that was our agreement. If so, that was the agreement, they could have at least deducted the expense.
So, counsel, you certainly are stating the evidence in the record that was offered by the defendants. That's right. But the plaintiffs offered a different perspective on what the agreement was. As you said, it certainly was that, again, I'm using first names, Jesus, the plaintiff, was able to live in one of the properties that was owned by the partnership. But it was his testimony is also that because he is spending full time managing the properties, which involve repairs, improvements, collection of rent, communication with tenants, a number of other things. There's a long list in his testimony, that he also was being compensated for that work, which is, again, typical in this type of a business. You know, if it hadn't been the plaintiff doing these acts, someone would have had to have been paid for it. So in terms of continuing the ongoing operations of the business. So I guess I'm a little confused what exactly your argument is. It seems to be assuming that this court is going to take the defendant's testimony is true, but actually we're going to take the record that favors the jury verdict and test it and say, does it favor the jury's verdict? And if it does, you know, we wouldn't see a basis for granting a new trial.
Okay. It it doesn't, the, my claim is different than that. I agree with you that it would not be out of the ordinary for someone to have that situation. But here's what tips it over for you. He never told them. He never advised them of any withholding of money that he was doing. They were unaware of that. He said in those same pages that I identified, look, we're going to own these houses, and in 10 years, we'll split the houses. I'll have half, and you'll have half. Well, he's got half plus his other monies that he's kept that they didn't know about that they were paying taxes on. Then he goes on further and says, when you withdrew money out, so let's agree, Judge, he withdrew money out. No record of it. We withdrew money out to pay taxes to the federal government and the state government, to pay off loan balances for outside money that was coming in to buy these additional houses that he disavowed in his own testimony. So that he had any ownership interest in. So not only that, the jury awards him half of all the properties that he asked.
I could go back to a question that Judge Bradfield asked. How does this argument get beyond, how is this argument more than a dispute about credibility, the credibility finding?
Because the documents show the transactions that happen that support the position of the defendants in the case. And had they looked at those documents, they would have been able to follow it through. I've been very impressed with juries my whole career. But this was just astounding. And I don't know if it's Friday night at 6 o'clock, or this was a very complicated case, Judge. The parties deserve better than this. They deserve somebody, if we say, look, he disavowed these next houses, we went ahead and bought more houses with independent monies, the rents covered that, he shouldn't own those houses. And the documents show that he wouldn't have owned those houses. They weren't titled in his name. There was nothing like that. But and so, counsel, we admit that as to those,
Mr. Wettering, that your time is up for your opening remarks, and I'm not trying to cut you off. If you want to finish your sentence, go right ahead. But please know you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you just want to continue.
Thank you. I would just say that in finishing this up is that when you have evidence that confirms one side is accurate in what they're saying, and that you don't take the time to look at it, then and determine that, then it appears to us that you just go in and say, well, it's six of one, half dozen of another, let's just divide this all equally and give the plaintiff the money that they withdrew from the account. And that seems to be the decision here. Thank you, Judge.
I said, counsel, thank you for your opening remarks, and you will get 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll reset the clock, Mr. Flynn, to 15 minutes for respondent's argument. There we go. We are ready for you, Mr. Flynn, when you're ready.
It may please the court. Judge Bradwell, I think you and Judge Ross, to a great extent, hit the nail on the head here. This case was based on the evidence that was presented. And as I understand, and all the research that I've done on cases where the
Mr. Flynn, I'll just stop you for just a brief moment. I see the video camera, I think, for Mr. Wettering. Perhaps you've just shut it off. I'm not looking at all of my options on Zoom here right now. Mr. Wettering, we ask you to keep your camera on for the duration of the argument. I know that, you know, different Zoom proceedings, you know, proceed differently, but that's what we do here. So I apologize, Mr. Flynn. Why don't we reset the clock at 15 minutes and we'll go right ahead. There we go. Please go ahead, Mr. Flynn.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. And if it pleases the court, the jury verdict in this matter, as were most every other issue in this case, stipulated to between the parties. The instructions given to the jury, the verdict form. What the jury decided this case on was based on the testimony. And to listen to the appellant's counsel argue this, the plaintiff or respondent here didn't know the first thing about the business, and the jury accepted what he was saying. Well, as the court has reviewed the record here, there were witnesses that did look at the documents here, and the key witness in that regard is Larry Eitan, who is the accountant that we called as a witness. He did review the appellant's tax returns. He did review the Bank of the West records. The Bank of the West in Worthington was the partnership account. When Jesus Cardenas moved to Worthington after a year of commuting from Hutchinson, working all weekend and then going back and working at Bongar Cheese, he did contribute to this partnership in a manner much greater than Javier Cardenas or Irma Zamora. At the outset, both brothers contributed the cash. After that, the properties that were purchased were initially funded by the appellant's Bank of America home equity account, by Cardenas Yard Service and J.P. Morgan Chase. But as the court will note in the documentary exhibits and the arguments here, all of this money that was used for the initial down payment for these properties was paid back to these entities. It was paid back from rental money from the partnership account.
And counsel, if I understand you right now, you're referring to your client's testimony, the plaintiff's testimony with regard. Oh, actually, that's right. I think it did come from both sides, didn't it? It was one of the facts that I believe both sides agreed on, right? That the down payments were reimbursed. That's right.
Yes, but not only that, but the records that the respondent got from Bank of the West here, which we had been seeking from the appellants for 2 or 3 years, the bank records are the ones that spoke most loudly about this. And those bank records is analyzed by our accountant, and the appellant's tax returns is analyzed by our accountant, which are the documents about which the appellant's claim were ignored. Those showed that every dime that was advanced through one of the appellant's home equity or other loan accounts was reimbursed using partnership rental funds.
And again, you're talking about the Bank of the West records and the analysis of your expert, right?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I think I do follow that. And I appreciate you pointing it out. Here's the part I would like to ask you about. I've actually got one small question and one bigger question. So the smaller question, I think, is that we have a second account, the Fulda Area Credit Union account.
Yes.
And that was also, as I understood it, both sides undisputed that that is a partnership account. Is that right?
As I understand it, Judge, they opened this Fulda Area Credit Union account to put the damaged deposits into. And there were two instances of withdrawals from that account, which never should have been made. One was when Jesus took money out to pay the real estate taxes in cash, as he paid everything else. The other time was when Javier bought 3 houses in Lismore, Minnesota, a town about 20 miles from Worthington, took that money out of that damage deposit account to help fund his purchase that he put in either his and his wife's name or in his children's names, took that money out of that damage deposit account and used that. Those are the two times that Fulda Area Credit Union account was ever talked about in this matter. Neither one of those, neither one of these parties should have taken any money out of that account.
So that second instance you're talking about, that's the what the record shows with in, from your point of view as to the jury's determination about the $12,945. Is that right?
Okay. I think so, yes.
So if you don't mind, and I'm doing this partly, I don't mean to rush you, but to make sure I get my questions out so you have a chance to answer.
Sure.
So the bigger issue, I guess, so now that I understand what the Fulda account was used for, the bigger question about the Bank of America account, I think it has to do with the jury's finding 3C, that the amount of money that Javier Cardenas and Irma Zamora improperly withdrew for non-partnership purposes was over $400,000. And I know that your expert and offered testimony with regard to that account. I'm not sure, and it may be that I just missed it, but I'm not sure I understand whether your expert offered a clear recitation of the amount that was improperly withdrawn by the defendants from the Bank of America or Bank of the West account. So did I miss that? Or are there like a series of transactions? I'm just giving you an example that somehow add up to that number that the jury came to.
I'll be very frank about this, Judge. I tried to add up the different amounts that the appellants took out of the Bank of the West account here, and I can't get to the figure that the jury arrived at, that $403,428. There were a number of things that the appellants took money out of the Bank of the West account to reimburse their home equity account. They took money out of there to pay their estimated tax payments. They took money out of there to pay their own home mortgage out in Seattle.
Well, you understand, I think, where I'm headed. It sounds like you tried to do the same thing. I appreciate there's a lot of testimony. It comes from both sides, not just your side. There's a lot of testimony about improper withdrawals and claims of improper withdrawals. What I'm trying to understand is what evidence supports the jury's determination in 3C. And so where would you tell me to look? It sounds like you're saying, look at my expert, but I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Does your expert testify to something that at least, is more than or gets close to the $403,000 that I see in the jury's special verdict finding?
I think the expert looked at all of the payments that came out of the Bank of the West account that went to someone other than the partners. That rental account at Bank of the West was just that. It was the account in which Jesus deposited the rent money. When he went around each month to collect the rent money, this was a cash economy between the landlords and tenants here. He would keep out however much money he owed to the people that installed a furnace in a house, that people that helped him shingle the house, whatever. He would keep that money out, pay everything in cash. He would then take and he got a receipt for everything that he paid, and would send those receipts to Javier and Irma in Seattle, who in many places in the record indicated they never even looked at those. They never looked at the bank statements. They never looked at the receipts that Jesus was sending. It is rather unbelievable for me to believe.
Again, counsel, I understand, your client has clearly laid out that testimony during trial about his own efforts to document and save receipts, which I know was an issue at trial. We just heard that from appellant's counsel. What I'm trying to ask you to get back to instead is, this finding in 3C is about the defendants improperly withdrawing. So obviously they were authorized to withdraw from Bank of the West. I assume they had the right documents in place to withdraw from Bank of the West for partnership expenses, right?
Yes.
Yes, but not for personal expenses. So that's what I'm. Where do I look to find out what were the improper withdrawals? Where's the evidence showing improper withdrawals by the defendants for personal expenses, not for the partnership?
I would look at the exhibits, which are the canceled checks, or not canceled, but the photocopies of the checks through Bank of the West that demonstrate or show clearly that the appellants here withdrew an enormous amount of money from this rental account to pay for non-partnership items.
And how do I know that those are non-partnership items? I mean, documents don't usually say that. So.
Well, when they're paying, that neither one of these individuals, Jesus or Javier, spent a day in school. Neither one of them was literate in terms of reading or understanding English. Jesus didn't look at anything in writing. He could barely read. And I think that's about Javier's case as well. But the bank records, the question is, how do you or where should you look to see that these were non-partnership matters? I think the Bank of the West checks that we obtained, that we had to go back and get, clearly show all these expenditures for non-partnership reasons. For example, any payments to the IRS, to the Minnesota Department of Revenue, whatever, were non-partnership expenses on the defendants. When the defendants paid their income tax to the federal government, that was for their businesses out in Seattle and their rental business. So they're taking money out of the partnership to pay their income tax for the Cardenas Yard Service out in Seattle, Washington.
Right, which I guess gets me back to my question about your expert's testimony. It seems to me that the expert clearly identified some expenditures or payments made from the Bank of the West account by the defendants that went to the defendant's other business, this yard service. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that gets a certain chunk of that amount that the jury determined. I'm not looking at the numbers right now. I guess I could. Something like $113,000, something like that.
Well, there was considerably more than that.
Oh, it was more than that? Okay. All
right. Yes. And I think if you look at Larry Eitan's testimony and the Bank of the West records, that will clearly show that there was a considerable amount of money that was taken from the Bank of the West account for non-partnership reasons. We argued in our final argument that the money for non-partnership purposes included the money that Beatrice Cardenas took that they were totally unaware of, that was paid to Irma Zamora, that was paid to the IRS, to H&R Block, the Minnesota Revenue, to the city of Seattle, to the Cardenas children. There was a good number of amounts that were paid out that had nothing to do with this partnership, and it was taken out of the rental account. They've titled these houses, the ones that were on the verdict form, those six properties, in their names alone. Some of them got mortgages from Bank of the West. Well, Bank of the West simply took money out of their rental account and made their monthly mortgage payments on those to properties that they had in their own names. Now, to be quite frank about it, as I've said before, I tried to add up the different figures that we had that we believed were partnership funds used for non-partnership purposes, and I can't get to the figure of $403,428 exactly. I don't know. I didn't make a study or a considerable effort to this because I believe that on an appeal where the only issue is that the verdict was manifestly and palpably contrary to the evidence, that the appeals court's practice and the black letter law was that the court doesn't do any fact finding, the appellate courts don't do any fact finding, the facts are in the light most favorable to the respondent, and so I didn't spend a good deal of time trying to cipher out how they came to this exact figure. I know that that was the basis on which we made an argument. In our final argument, we showed different amounts, which were the totals of these checks that we obtained from Bank of the West. We added them all up and come up with the amounts. I think what one important feature here, which again has nothing to do with this appeal because it is a weighing of the evidence, is that neither Irma Zamora or Javier Cardenas ever looked at any of these records during this 18 years or during the time that this partnership was in effect. And I've made reference in our memorandum as to the sections of the transcript where they both admitted that. They never looked at any of those documents. Yet, when they decided that they wanted to end this partnership in 2018, they indicated that, well, Jesus stole all this money. Jesus bought a new pickup in 2012.
Counsel, I'll just point out that your time has expired. So if you would just wrap up your remarks. Thank you.
Well, I think if the court looks at what the appellant's arguments were as to why they believe they're entitled to all this property is not supported by the facts that were submitted in evidence.
Thank you, counsel. And I just want to remind everyone, we do have your briefs and the complete record that's been submitted to the court on appeal. So if we don't get to, you know, hone down into exactly the point that you omit all of the points that you'd like to make, please know that we do carefully review everything that's submitted. So with that, we've reset the clock, Mr. Wettering, for 5 minutes, and you have the option of a rebuttal. So go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. I need to correct this. There's no money withdrawn from the Fulda Area Credit Union to purchase any other properties. The only money withdrawn from the Fulda Area Credit Union was by Jesus Cardenas prior to the separation of the properties in 2018 by the parties, when they each controlled different types of different properties. Council suggested that the credit union money was withdrawn to buy other properties in other towns. That's simply not true. It's not part of the evidence. It's not traceable in any document that's there. What they did do was withdraw the balance at that separation time and put it into a deposit account for deposits on rents in a different bank. When they separated, that's where that money went, and that's what it was used for. It became under their control at that time. The other withdrawals from that were all not proper withdrawals.
If I could, just because you're right that the financial documents are detailed. So to find the point that you're trying to make, the record support for that particular point, what happened to the what withdrawals were made from the Fulda Credit Union account. What testimony or part of the record do I examine?
Irma Zamora testified that she withdrew the money from that account when they separated in 2018 and put it in a deposit-only account at Wells Fargo. And she testified that that's where that money went, and that was the only withdrawal they ever made. All the other withdrawals over the years were improperly withdrawn by Jesus Cardenas. This business about the rents, if you can see the deception here that's going on, after Jesus Cardenas said, look, if you guys want to buy other houses and do that on your own, I'm not part of that anymore. I don't want to be involved with her for whatever reason that was. That was when they owned 11 houses. The court has to understand here that then when the appellants bought these other houses with their own money, the rents still went into this same account. So when counsel suggests to the jury and so forth here that this money then came, it was partnership money that was paid over to the appellants here. No, it was at least it was money that were involved in these other houses, although the rents were going into the same account.
Counsel, if I follow you right, based on my knowledge, and I know you know the record much better than I do. That's why I'm asking. So you're talking about the Bank of the West account, right?
Bank of the West account.
Yeah.
So the rents from your houses was going in there too.
I'm sorry, counsel. The defendants did have access to that, right? They were able to write checks.
Yes.
On yeah. Okay. All right. Just making sure I understood.
Yeah, and I just want the court to see. You know, the plaintiff disavowed any connection to the next group of houses that was bought, but the money, the rents from those houses, still went into that account, and then was argued at, I'm sorry.
I'd like to follow up on some of that, because we have to review all this in the light most favorable to the verdict. And a big part of your argument is about where Judge Ross started, how long the jury deliberated. So let's go on a hypothetical, and let's say the jury deliberated here for a week, and they went on for a very long time and considered all this testimony and all the documents. What's your best argument that this is contrary to the evidence?
That their verdict is contrary to the evidence?
Yeah, and saying that, let's say they deliberated for a full week. And after a full week and carefully considered everything, asked for more documents, all that sort of stuff, why is this verdict contrary to the evidence?
Because the evidence shows that after that episode with Jesus, when they started using Irma Zamora's ID number for their loans, he said, "You guys go ahead." They went ahead then and bought these other houses. All the houses are in Javier and Irma's name. All of the down payments came from outside sources, not the Bank of the West. All of the monies, however, just continued to be paid into the Bank of the West. Counsel talks about how they never looked at this account. They trusted him. They never knew that any of this was going on for all this time. And if the jury would have looked at these different transactions after Jesus disavowed the partnership going forward, they would have come to the conclusion, look, he's out. He's in on these 11 houses. He gets half of the 11 houses. They get the 8 houses they bought afterward with other money that he disavowed. And the monies that were withdrawn by them were from that money, or they were used for partnership purposes to pay all the income tax, to pay all the accounting, to do all of those things that he never paid any of that.
So, and Judge, that I have another question, if I may, Judge Bradfold.
Yeah.
So your argument really hinges then on this disavowal, right? Like from that point, that's really the crux of what you're arguing here.
That is a huge part of it, but it's not the complete part of it. Because if I'm running a real estate business and I take money out of it to pay my taxes, and I mean I do that here. And I have a business and I take money out so I can pay my taxes. I mean, that is what we do in business. And then, but to stand that on its head, Judge, they admit they've been taking money. The plaintiff took money out of it every month. No record of it whatsoever. And we're just supposed to not even look at that. He'd never filed a tax return. He was never given a K-1. He was never given a 1099, never given a W-2, and never reported to his brother or the accountant that he took a dime out of this business. Not anything. That is it's just unbelievable to me how this came together. And maybe it's my fault, but these people used their credit to buy even the 11 properties, because there's no record of any money coming into this business from Jesus, except my client admitted the first house they bought, they each paid $20,000 for. After that, not a dime. And this is the crux. That's part of the crux of it. But certainly these monies coming out of a business going to the people that are doing all the financing of it, and now they have a verdict that says, oh, you owe that money back. It's so beyond the pale insofar as contrary to the evidence in the case. And I think that it's easy to grow tired of these fine items of banking and so forth. But when we walked by the pizza delivery man leaving when we left the courthouse that was going to bring the pizza to the jury, and an hour later, we got a call that they had a verdict. And there was a stack of papers 2 feet high, several feet long, that went in with that jury at 6 o'clock on a Friday night. And I'm terribly disappointed with the effort that I believe went into this on the part of the jury. And I realize that I think it needs to be, we need a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both lawyers in this case. We very much appreciate hearing from you. The matter is now submitted to the court for a decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe.